Enjoy the song. Welcome to the Janessa Hoffman Hour. We're telling tales of the dark crypt tonight, the crypt of land and labor, where darkness falls on the earnestness of man, while man tries hard to find his professional meaning. I'm jumping into the studio. That was John Yoder and Slick and the church group singing New Way. Once I get in the studio, I can see if John's on board. So tonight I wanted to clarify some topics. It's going slow tonight, sorry. I wanted to clarify some topics. I recently went through a labor dispute, and part of the problem was that I wasn't necessarily at odds with the person, but over a long period of time, I didn't know where I stood. By the way, John, if you're holding, I'm still trying to get in the studio. I didn't know where I stood over a long period of time. And, John, I see you, and I'm going to pull you in 1 minute. Over a long period of time, I had contributed feature articles for a local publication for a year and also volunteered 3 to 4 hours a week, except for 2 times during that course when I was on vacation. Over that long period of time, I served a gentleman who had a local newspaper that appeared to only have a shoestring budget, but as it turns out, after the state of Minnesota disclosed his earnings, it was a $500,000 business, $462,000 to be exact. He did not pay me during that time, and he ended up paying somebody else to do the work that I did for 5 months, and we worked simultaneously at the company at the same time. But the worst part about it is that I was on quicksand. I never knew where I stood. Some weeks he wanted to publish my articles, other weeks he declined, and the original agreement was that he would publish my articles and I would help out, and the ultimate direction would be to see if I could prove myself. And it's not like I was a 17-year-old on an internship. I proved myself time over again on many occasions, and he was still a flake. And both of his employees complained about him, saying that he was poorly organized. He would come in with last-minute demands on the night of the publication, and we held it together. There were also a number of other events that happened, but I'm going to pull John in first. Hi, John. How's it going?
Well, hello, Purple Jane. How are you?
I crawled out of bed, and luckily your song was cued already, so I could kind of take my merry time moseying into the studio to hook you up.
Wow.
So last night I was planning to do a show about my Charles Dickens job on Bleecker Street, but guess who popped into the show while I was trying to explain it?
Must be King Albert.
Yep, and I did tell Don about it because he used to work for a newspaper, but part of the show got hijacked because King Albert had data on the Green Party debate with Jill Stein, another doctor, and somebody else. And he even brought up a few other things. And then guess what I saw tonight on Albert's Facebook page?
Someone of a female persuasion?
No, there's another debate coming up with the Libertarian Party with three candidates. And guess who one of the debaters is going to be?
Sanders?
Jesse Ventura.
No way.
Yeah, I don't think he officially joined the race, but somehow he's going to pop into the debate. And he threatened earlier on CNN this year to do that. So that's rather shocking, don't you think?
That'll spice things up a little bit.
Yeah, too bad that like some of those offshoot candidates can't get more airtime. But we are going to talk about employment and employment laws tonight, but what did you think of Sanders beating Clinton again?
That was a little surprising. I thought he was running out of steam. But he does have these pockets of power. So more power to him.
Yeah, I mean, this time he beat her by 5%, but some of those states are graduated where they each get their proportional votes. So I'm going to see if – I don't think Ventura officially would have joined the race because I would have heard about being that he lives in Minnesota. So let's hold on here a second. He said, "I'll run for president if Bernie Sanders loses." He wrote February 29th in the Daily Beast.
Wow.
So,
Bernie seems to get the smaller state. Bernie seems to get the smaller state action, and Hillary seems to get the big, states on the coast kind of thing.
The only time that was different is she swept the South. There were some states in the South that she got 79%, and he got like 20%. And
yeah,
can I read one clip? Can I read a clip? Jesse Ventura told the Daily Beast he will run for president if Sanders does not win the Democratic convention. Ventura was elected the governor of Minnesota as an independent in 1998, serving as a Navy SEAL and professional wrestler. Well, that's not what he served as, but that was the article. Ventura said his campaign was so successful at showing an outsider could be elected that Trump and Sanders are ripping him off. He bets he can do it again if Sanders loses and the election is Hillary Clinton versus Trump. They're setting the groundwork for me because if Bernie loses, by the time we get to June, how sick are the people going to be of all these people? He said while dressed in a Jimi Hendrix shirt and a blazer and a SEALs beanie. I'm an independent and I despise the two parties. I love what Trump's doing to Republicans. He's got them in complete disarray. In fact, it looks like the WWE when you watch their debates. I'm not going to read anymore. Anyways, he's more of a sharpshooter than Trump, but he doesn't brag every minute of the way. So let me just explain one thing to you. I've already kind of rehashed. I got a letter in the mail last night saying that I won the conciliation court that I had last Thursday. And I was awarded $855 for someone that I worked for a year and a half and did not pay me income. They gave me food certificates, like $20 gift cards to a coffee house. So I basically won the court case, and the stipulation was a statute saying that if someone's doing administrative work for you and it's a for-profit business, you cannot hire people as a volunteer, nor can you hire people who do similar work, like pay one person and not the other. So I didn't take him to court out of remorse. I took him to court out of the fact that he neglected me for a year and a half, and I gave him two offers of conciliation, and he didn't accept it.
So you had your day in court, and justice was served.
Right, and I asked for I asked for 200 hours at $9 an hour, but supposedly the Minnesota minimum wage in 14 and 15 was $6.50. So Bob lied in court and said that I probably only worked 120 hours. And then I probably goofed around 70 of those hours, which is absolutely not true because he wasn't there half the time. So, but they paid me 120 hours times 650, and then they paid for my court costs. Are you at work?
Actually,
or are you
talking
to Slack?
No, I'm just listening to you.
Are you talking to the dog?
No, I was actually grabbing a bag. But, you know, I'll put my phone on mute while you talk. That way you don't hear background noise.
Okay. Just for 30 seconds, I just want to get the rest of this out. So I just want to recap my 18 months there. First of all, if you go on the website, they have a listing of the history of the company. And in the listing, he talks about a man who worked for him for a couple of months who violated employment law. He was collecting unemployment, and he worked. Here, I'll just read you that clip if I can find it. So, anyways, they were starting the company out, and they had a lot of glitches along the way. But this is what he said. I'll just change the name though. PP walked into the office announcing he wanted to be the editor. PP persuaded blah blah of his merit by announcing he had recently been fired as the editor of another paper. I can't say the name of the other paper. PP suggested a regular column, Thoughts Sunk While Thinking, which quickly morphed into something insane, often inspiring the genius of Next Level. PP offered to help as a volunteer until his unemployment ran out. When the time came, PP, it was the publisher's intention to hire PP as the first employee, but it was blocked when ad sales would not allow for such large room. It says largesse, but it must be like an ad that wasn't big enough for the page. Learning of the barrier to the fledglingly paper's growth, activist ER volunteered a donation of $1,000 to help out PP. So anyways, this guy stayed with the company until his unemployment ran out. When you're gathering unemployment, you're not supposed to be volunteering at another business with no pay. You're supposed to be actively searching for work. Now, the other thing is he would come in on deadline night and he would want to make last-minute changes that were detrimental. One time I wrote a six-piece series on the Seventh-day Adventists and the Waco series, but I fictionalized it. And after I had written five installments, he said I could only write one more. And he didn't even know about my installments until the third installment. Like, he didn't even know it was in the paper. Another time I wrote a Christian message during Easter, and I guess it pissed off some of his friends who were atheists. Another time they do an April Fool's issue every year, I wrote one story, he didn't like it, and then I had to do another one at 2 in the morning when I had already worked 12 hours at my other job that day. And then after I wrote the rewrite, he still didn't publish it. Are you still there, John? You can come back in.
Well, I'm just hearing the history of the conflict, as it were.
And I only did one Jihad Jane thing during the whole time.
That's rare.
Very funny. I guess I was reminded in court when his employee said that I hid all the calendar files the last week I was there, and they couldn't find them the night of publishing. And I forgot that I did that.
Wow.
It had all the names and addresses of the places, you know, that had events. And I still have the files. I'll give them back to him after he pays me.
So it's still just giving a full confession on the radio log.
I know that's the only thing I'm going to say, but I actually kept them on their computer, too. On the desktop, they just couldn't find them.
Wow.
Well, sometimes I think Christians are protected when they do things for a just cause. Just like when my heroes burn the Milwaukee draft board cards to save people, someone from dying in a war.
I think maybe that happens. It's really hard to tell historically because so many bad things happen. And then sometimes good people, you know, even Christians, try to do good things and then they don't succeed. So it's interesting. It's always good when you have the favor and the blessing to do things. I'll give you an example. In World War II, they were trying to decode the Nazis' messages. Because they figured if they could find out what the Nazis were doing, and vice versa, everyone was trying to each one's signals. And the Nazis would, of course, write in code when they were communicating with their generals and their military. And they had a man in England, his name was Turing, and there was a movie about it made. It was called it's coming to me. It was called A Game, and basically what they're trying to do was break the code. And so the program he was in charge of was called Enigma, Operation Enigma, and he had machines that he put together, he made, that would take all the communications and try to break them down by letters and figure out a pattern or a code. So
there was
a
movie about it, right?
it was something... I'm trying to think, it's something like, not the imposter game. It was like, it's like when you're trying to copy something. It started with an I.
No, it was called the Enigma something. Benedictine Cumberbatch, who's now the star of Sherlock Holmes. Here, I'll look it up while you keep talking.
Right, the guy's name, the last name was Turing, T-U-R-I-N-G. And,
yeah, I'm
just
talking about the actor, Cumberbatch.
And so what happened is that basically he spent a couple of years on this, and he just couldn't get anywhere. Even his staff was just, they were so depressed because they were like, you know, we should be out there fighting for our country. People are dying, and we're just doing this worthless, you know, exercise. And so the leader of the program, Turing, was a homosexual. And at the time, it was a crime. You get arrested and thrown in prison for it. And especially with the war, everyone was pretty uptight. So he actually proposed to marry this gal that was in the program just to kind of get the heat off of him. And so when they're talking to her girlfriend, they were talking about how their progress was going. And she said, you know, I actually... they were talking about men and women, how they just don't know how to communicate to each other. And she said, you know, well, I already have a boyfriend. You know, it's one of the Nazis. And they asked her,
wow.
Well, what do you mean? He said, what do you mean? She says, well, I've never met him. And, of course, I've never talked to him. But just every day I'm assigned to follow his communications. And it's like I know him. You know, it's like I know him better than a human, than a boyfriend. And then they explain, they said, well, you know, they're supposed to start their first five lines or whatever in a different sequence than the day before. That way it can't be tracked. He said, this one's different. He always starts it with the same phrase. Don't know what it is because it's in code. And they said, really? And then Turing was so struck by this, he said, tell me more. He said, well, he has a certain style, a certain cadence, a certain rhythm, the way he types. I know it's him, you know, when I read the communication. And they began to realize, they thought, you know what, they have to salute Hitler in it. So somewhere in there has to be Heil Hitler or Heil to the Führer kind of thing. So the problem they had is they were looking for millions and millions of combinations. They said, no, let's just look for Heil Hitler. And it's got to be in there. And so they basically dialed in those letters and tried to find a sequence or a pattern to that, and they locked in on it. It was in every communication. And pretty soon with that, they were able to crack the code. But here's where it got interesting. It got interesting because it's kind of a boring movie to me until suddenly they were solving this mystery. They figured it out, and they started lining up the coordinates of boats and planes on the map. And one of the workers there said, My brother is on one of those boats that's going to get blown up. We have to warn him. He said, no, we can't warn him because the Germans will know we've cracked their code. And he started, you know, getting upset. This is my brother. You have to do something. You're not God. And he said, we're not trying to be God. God could stop this, but we can't. We're just trying to stop the war. And we're humans. And what they actually, the bigger issue was, they realized they couldn't tell anyone. Because if they told the government, they would immediately react and respond, and the Germans would know that their messages were getting leaked. So they began to talk about how do we give information to the government and everyone else without tipping the boat. And it even got to the point, so they started talking to the liaison between the government, their rep, and he agreed with them. He said, we can't tell the government that we know the code. So we're going to slowly leak information to the government and other people, some of it even false, and only wait for the really important stuff. Well, what happened is after a year or so of this going on, they were talking about some of the people in the program. And Turing said, you know, I think we have a spy. And the director of the program said, I know you have a spy. I put him in your program. He said, you put a Russian spy in my program? He said, I needed to track what the Russians were doing. So I needed to know what kind of information he was leaking. So everyone's a spy on everyone else.
I have some ideas about it. First of all, the movie's called The Imitation Game, and
Yes.
Like I said, Benedict Cumberbatch played cryptanalyst Alan Turing, who decrypted German intelligence codes for the British government. It was a best-selling film. Like, I think they made it for the Weinstein Company acquired the film for $7 million, but it made $233 million worldwide. So anyways, basically, I have heard certain parts. I haven't seen the movie, but I'm familiar with the story. And it's too bad they were caught in that crosshairs of not being able to, you know, utilize the decryption right at that particular moment. Did that brother die, by the way? Did that relative die on the ship then?
I believe so. And what was even more tragic is when they finally, the government finally was able to use, you know, information, and they used it for like D-Day, Normandy, and other big, you know, major situations. And it was very beneficial. They figured he shortened the war by 2 years, saved probably 14 million people. But what was interesting is at the end of it all, when the war was over, you know, they were free. He said, no, you have to burn all the information, destroy all the evidence. They let him keep his machines, but it's like they were going to destroy everything. He said, you know, no one can know about this. So it was top secret for 50 years. And until 2013, Queen Elizabeth actually gave him a pardon. What happened is after the war, they arrested him for being a homosexual. And they gave him a choice. You either have to go to prison or take basically castrate yourself by taking hormone pills that would basically make him impotent. And he chose that one. And he later committed suicide, I think, around 54. So about 10 years later after the war. So it's one of those really sad stories. But the point being is that
he committed suicide.
He couldn't live with the fact that, you know, just his whole life was, you know, all he had left was his little machines, and that was it. And he didn't have a life left over. And he couldn't celebrate his victory with anyone or, you know, at all. He couldn't go public. He couldn't. He was basically, a hero that was discarded and thrown away. So kind of what I was relating to is, you know,
can I mention something about him?
Go
ahead.
Go for it.
Yeah, he was also a computer science pioneer. He was a logician, which just means that, you know, it's logic stuff. A theoretical biologist, algorithms is something that he worked on. And Turing is widely considered to be the father of theoretical computer science and artificial intelligence, because he developed formulas of algorithms and computation with the Turing machine. So he was way beyond his time.
Right. Basically, his work pioneered what we have as, you know, computers. Obviously, there are other people involved in that process, but his whole mindset and theories and strategies and all that, he was genius. And what destroyed his life was he was a homosexual in a time where it was criminal to be so. But very interesting story, very compelling story. And but I was kind of relating to how, you know, you were trying to do top secret things, and other people are doing other top secret things against you, and you have to kind of figure it out. Life is a mystery. You know, governments are mysterious. They're doing all kinds of crazy stuff. And you know, what is the truth when you try to break it down? You know, it's spy versus spy, basically.
Yeah. I don't know. In some ways, this doesn't compare to my story because, first of all, I don't consider myself a martyr in the case of the newspaper business. I consider myself as someone who I was on standby for a year and a half, and I wanted the man to give me an answer, like, are you going to be part of the team? And am I going to hire you, or are you just going to be a waif, a wigger, which I won't say on the air what that means. Are you going to be a wigger who comes in week after week and just gets overlooked and other people will be hired and you won't? And then I found out later the person that he hired, he wanted them to do social media, and I have a lot more experience in social media than she does. So I don't really want to say any more about it because I got the privilege of having my articles published, probably over 30, and 60 articles total, but there was two that they didn't put. So I got those privileges and I got exposure, but in the end, even the day that it happened, neither him nor I knew that he was breaking an employment law. I called the state to find out what my rights were, and that's when we both discovered that he was breaking employment laws. So, you know, that's pretty much the end of it. And then I just want to jump ship a minute. I want to tell you about another subject. Do you remember the name Andre Simone, one of Prince's sidekicks?
I think so. Mm-hmm.
Well, anyways, you know, he did a long, a full-length article with Billboard about a few days after he died. And Prince practiced 5 hours a day from 7th to 12th grade on music. So, and so he moved in with, Prince moved in with, Andre Simone, who used to be called, his real name was Andre Simon Anderson. And he lived with that family for 5 years and, they played music every single day. So, there's a good article on billboard.com about it. If you just Google Andre Simone's name, Cymone. And people can read it if they want. So what's happening in your world this week?
Well, I actually, as you know, I have a backup phone. My original phone that had died, and I rolled it over to a new phone as far as the number. So I was with the hound today. We were doing a little squirrel chasing and a little bird chasing. We go out two or three times a day and do that. And we were going along the pier this evening, and someone called me, so I was, you know, talking a little on the phone with them. And we were going along the pier, the dock.
And you dropped your phone in the Pacific Ocean.
I actually didn't drop the phone. The dog saw a bird and took a humongous lunge. And it ripped me off the bike practically, which is rare, but, you know, it's sometimes just a bad angle, a perfect storm. And as I flew and landed, I was holding the phone, and it just bounced right out of my hand and off into the blue yonder. Yeah, it was, I didn't know if it landed in there or not. I was looking all over, but I could not find it. So it's somewhere swimming in the bottom of the ocean.
That's really sad. You've had a lot of goofy.
Fortunately,
you've had a lot of goofy phone experiences, right?
Well, it was a $29.99 phone, so thank goodness it was the cheapest thing I could possibly have. And I was going to load $40 of minutes on it actually last night, and I didn't have the time. And so I'll get another one tomorrow, and I'll just load the minutes. So all in all, I mean, basically the most minimal damage possible.
Yeah, I have a pretty good $20 phone, but I could mail it to you if you want it.
I have to roll over my number, and I need it probably tomorrow to do some other crazy shit.
I'm sorry.
Well, you know, it was for a good cause. The hound needs her exercise, and it was wild.
Could you say to your boss that it was a liability on the job, and I want you to replace the phone?
Oh, no, we don't want to discuss that I'm on a bike with a dog and a cell phone. Any of those three combinations would not even be in a conversation.
Be acceptable?
Correct.
I wonder if the person
here.
You were talking to, the person you were talking to, if they wondered what happened to you.
Probably, because they only have their phone number on that phone, and it's lost pictures of sea until, you know, like tomorrow, and they'll probably call and leave a message and that kind of thing. But that's okay. You know, it's not a $1 million conversation. So, you know, no harm, no foul. That's how I see it.
Yeah, I was going to tell you about it's kind of related to the same story, and I'm sorry for you, but tonight I got home, and I spent an hour on the computer after Lauren and I went to the mall because he had to order new glasses. It says your DNS connection is not working. And I almost canceled the show because it took me an hour to solve the problem. I had to go into a YouTube video, and I had to enter a proxy IP address. It was an internal problem, and it was very complicated to solve because, first of all, I couldn't open the computer just to YouTube and solve it. I had to open my phone, and I couldn't read it that well because my phone's smaller than the computer, and it was just very tough. So I almost canceled the show tonight due to technology, too. Are you calling from your home phone tonight?
I'm actually calling from my new cell phone that I got about a month ago. I used for biz. And because when at the time my cell phone died, the other number, I knew it was going to be a couple of days before I could get it back. And I couldn't be without a phone for even a half a day with this gig or with my other, you know, job. And besides, with life, you know, I just need to be able to communicate with people. To me, I don't need a phone. I could spend months or weeks without really having one. But everyone in the real world has to be able to communicate. So, therefore, I have to, you know, I have to coordinate my life with other people. So, it's all good.
I remember you telling me that story, too. Okay, well, I guess the moral of the story tonight is I want to tell you something about hostility because I'm just continuing with the subject because both of us are a little stumped. We can just we can do like a 45-minute show tonight. We don't unless you want to go the full hour. But basically, let's just see where we're at in about 10 minutes. Okay, earlier this week I went to my 12-step meeting, and I had a conflict with the counselor who runs the group because I felt like she was wasting time by spending 45 minutes on an article when 11 people had to still go around the group, and we have to answer, like, these 8 questions every week about our life. And I kind of confronted her, and it was kind of negative. And then I got home that night and realized I was exhausted and just didn't have time and energy to put in extracurricular things. So then I started examining myself and realizing how much resentment I had towards the person at the newspaper business who stiffed me. And I was thinking of negative things to do to, not really to sabotage the person, but I was thinking of ways I wanted to express to him in artistic ways exactly how he did me wrong. And I was going to do it, but I didn't. But I did create a web page on Facebook called with a similar parody name. And I was going to go after this guy in the newspaper who is always constantly criticizing Christianity. And I just started developing these really dark feelings. And then the next day I worked 13 hours. I worked a double shift, one at one job and one at the other. And when I got home, I won the court case. And I realized that all those resentments were the cause of my fear of being unsure whether I was going to win the case or not. And then I realized that I'm going to forgive that person, even though they slighted me, and that I shouldn't dwell on that situation anymore. I can't tell you the jokes and the parodies surrounding it because I can't. I'd have to use names that sound similar to the newspaper. But my whole gist tonight was just this one thing. Every week he has the same crop of writers. There's one environmentalist in there. There's one guy who doesn't really like religion and is always blaming somebody for something in the religious sector. And I was surprised this last week that they had three dedicated articles on Daniel Berrigan, who was a very well-known priest who was a war activist who died. But anyways, I was going to read you a clip in a few minutes when I found the anti-Christian guy. But anyway, it seems like every week they have the same mantra. And I don't really know if he's running the paper to make money or if he's just running it to inspire people. Because a lot of the stuff is the same old shit.
True. And I mean, I think we all try to find encouragement with what we follow. So we you know, sign on to websites or look up articles or go to church or groups that reinforce what we want to hear. And so I don't see anything too wrong with that, you know, unless the person is claiming to be fair and unbiased and then only looking at one side of the banana, as it were.
Well, let me just read you, I'll read you the first paragraph of one of his anti-religious articles. He wrote it December of last year. Can God overthrow the National Rifle Association? So what have we heard after the daily mass killings for over a decade from politicians and candidates for office when they attempt to console families? Something about our thoughts and prayers are with you. That phrase is as powerful as an automatic salute to the military. Thank you for your service, translated means thank God I didn't have to go. Of course, we do not have any atheists in Congress. An atheist could never be elected by such a God-fearing group in a country populated by 90% who believe in God. It's actually 70% who attend church. I didn't think 90% believed in God. We have a diverse group of religious politicians who consistently vote against any thought of gun control in a country that is absolutely possessed and obsessed by the gun culture sponsored by the NRA. They really are statements in the Bible and Quran containing rules about killing, such as thou shalt not. One second, okay? I lost my place, but I also changed something. Just a second. Okay, what did I do with it? Okay, well, I lost the article now, but just a minute. Okay, here it is. They are really statements in the Bible and Quran containing rules about killing, such as thou shalt not. But I guess Republicans and a few renegade Democrats like North Dakota Senator Heidi Heitkamp thinks it's God's responsibility, not theirs, to rein in the gun culture. Evidently, thoughts about re-election are much more powerful than thoughts about effects of mass killings on a diverse society with 322 million people. There are Mormons, Baptists, Muslims, Catholics, Jews, Methodists, Lutherans, Presbyteria, and some other reps of the mainline religions in Congress who flood social media with that worn-out phrase, our thoughts and prayers are with you, to relatives when innocent groups are riddled with bullets. Look at one of the 20 first graders at Sandy Hook who ended up with 11 rounds from a Bushmaster AR-15 in his body. The killer Adam Lanza fired 154 rounds in less than 5 minutes. The NRA, Remington Arms, Smith & Wesson, Sturmruger, and other gun makers call these sporting rifles. What has been the result of all those thoughts and prayers over the mass killing years? Maybe we need another chant on the street. Thoughts and prayers aren't controlling guns. Congress must. Well, actually, in this situation, the article makes sense. So I don't mind him bringing in religion in this article. So what do you think of his writing style?
Well, he's an angry person, and he's got a one slant, but it's extreme. And because, as we know, if we didn't have guns, if we didn't use guns or weapons, we wouldn't exist as a country. Every major society, every major country has been there as a product of their weapons and their army and the use of force. And when he starts getting into how The commands not to kill. Well, that's on a personal relationship basis. Obviously, you have an army, you have to kill. God commanded his armies to kill in various times. So you can get all extreme about it. I mean, he can. But the point is, it's kill or be killed in the natural order of life. It's just the way it is. And he can stand there and sing Kumbaya all he wants and hate on it. But whether you're an atheist, Christian, or a communist, or Jew or Muslim, if you want peace, you're going to have to get an army and you're going to have to fight off people that want to hurt you. That's just a fact of life. You know, there's no way around that.
Yeah, I agree. And I was going to read just a few more lines and then I'm going to have you comment while I run to the kitchen and get a Diet Coke. Why does Great Britain have 1.4 firearm homicides per million and we have 29.7 per million? So that's a big jump. It might be because Great Britain has 1.8 million licensed firearms while we have an estimated 310 million. Because our vehicles are accounted for licensed, we know that there are 253 million on the road, give or take a few hundred, that we have junked 11.4 million last year and we know who owns them. We just estimate the number of firearms. When it comes to firearms, we don't have a clue how many are in homes, who owns them, and who manufactured them. We know that firearms kill as many people as 2-ton autos and 10-ton trucks. We have to recognize we live in a gun culture. Besides the well-advertised mass killings, if we add... I'm going to put you on mute just for 30 seconds because of the background noise. Okay, it'll just be a second. So we know that firearms kill as many as 2-ton autos and 10-ton trucks. We have to recognize we live in a gun culture. Besides the well-advertised mass killings, if we add in the ones that don't even make small headlines, we kill 92 people of all ages every day. 7 children die of firearms every day. We kill 33,000 a year with firearms and wound another 100,000. Since Sandy Hook in 2012, 20 first graders were murdered. We have killed 90,000 people and wounded 210,000 people. It costs $600 million at an average cost of slightly over $6,600 to bury these dead. How much does it cost to repair large holes in heads, guts, limb, and organs? And then he puts out a couple numbers. So I'm going to take you off mute now. So one thing I do like about his writing style is that he's clear and perfunct, but I don't like, he should devolve and write maybe an example. Like, for example, I saw over last weekend a young 20-year-old guy killed an 11-month-old baby. I think it was either through spanking or hitting. So, I mean, like, if you bring in a personal example, it kind of makes, has a little more impact. John?
Well, I guess the problem what he runs into is that there's always a problem with freedom. And so the question is, do you want your freedom or do you want lack of freedom and live with, you know, the, I mean, there's consequences either way. The fact is that if you have freedom, people can screw each other with it. So, yeah, you can take away weapons, but then you have a society that can be easily run over by bad guys, by governments, et cetera, et cetera. You know, why do we have a problem in the Middle East? Because they have weapons. So, yeah, we blew up their countries, but when we go door to door, there's a sniper at every corner, you know. There's people building their little bombs. That's just the way it's going to be. You could take away all their weapons and all their things, and then someone else, a dictator, just takes it over, and then he becomes a military strongman. He has his army run things. That's why we got out of Iraq, basically. It's like we're trying to get him, basically, we're a target practice because they had weapons. They had, you know, access to bombs and things. So that's what made the culture dangerous because we gave them freedom. We wanted to have a total totalitarian system, and to send in a dictator and you know, control. And that's what Saddam Hussein did. He controlled them. So we didn't want that, right? We wanted to give them freedom. Well, they got freedom. And that's the price tag.
I agree. And I was going to say, I played a 30-second clip last night from the Green Party candidates. There were three of them. One of them said that he believes in the Second Amendment as long as the United States government and military are acting arbitrarily. In other words, he believes in people being able to protect themselves as kind of like a buffer against the trust of government that makes bad decisions. And this is like a third-party candidate.
Yeah, I think, too, the other thing we have to factor in is that most of these killings and most of this random craziness are people that are mentally ill on antidepressants or medications. These aren't necessarily rational people. And on top of that, I also state I don't own a gun. I don't want a gun. 90% of the time, a person with a gun is going to use it against themselves or against someone they love. And 10% of the time, a criminal. Now, I understand the statistics are changing, you know, maybe, and it's slanted by who's doing the research. But bottom line is, you're probably more likely to hurt someone you love than a criminal. But that being said, I'm not going to take up people's freedom to defend themselves. It's just the fact that a criminal doesn't know if you have a gun or not. If you outlawed guns, then they're going to think, oh, no one's got a gun. I'm just going to run in there and have my way. The fact is, a criminal doesn't know. So that is a part of, I'm not sure if I should break into this house. Johnny Roth may have, some kind of weapon waiting for me. Especially when Slick has a weapon. I don't, but Slick does. So, you know, go figure.
It all comes up to one great psalm, which includes positive and negative. But here we have the man, Alan Turing, who had this genius ability that was able to crack the German code, but yet he was despised as a homosexual. We have my boss, who probably was only thinking of the almighty dollar, but in his eyes, the content of his newspaper is sufficient. And then we have people like this writer for a local paper up here talking about how all these statistics that really only add up to one thing, that man likes to kill and man feels justified in killing. So
right.
With that, go ahead.
And the other thing, he needs to consider context of times. Times change, and what may be relevant to this era may not be in another era. I mean, if he goes back 100 years ago, we had the Wild Wild West. You know, you had a sheriff come into town, and bad guys would come in there, and they needed guns, right? If you didn't have guns, the bad guys would take over. You go to Mexico, you got cartels, and you got criminals and vigilantes running around, practicing guerrilla tactics. It's like, do you want that in this country? You know, you have to take the perspective of a period of time and what society you get when you do a certain cause and effect. I think, to quote some statistics in a 10-year period or what's happening right now at this moment, it's not wise. If you go back a couple hundred years ago, how did people kill themselves? Well, they got swords. They got weapons, you know. And, people will find ways to kill each other if you take away one option. We are a violent culture. We study it. That's what makes us powerful. It's because we build and sell weapons to the countries. That's our power thing. That's what keeps us relevant in the planet. And without it, other countries would run us over or discard us. That's what makes us able to control and manipulate other societies, or at least protect ourselves from them, because they're weak. You know, who fears Guatemala or El Salvador or even Brazil or even to a degree Great Britain compared to us, right? It's our military superiority. So it's a two-edged sword, and we do need to trust in God and to become a gentler, kinder nation. I don't know if we're going to be able to, but with the help of God, we can. without it, I think we'll follow a path of destruction, and history usually bears that out.
I do want to say, you know, it always adds up to what the original intent is for each person. But last night, Albert did make a good point about elections and people in general, that he thinks that some people, well, this is kind of off topic maybe, but he thinks that some people in the news are just modeling behavior to drive the dialogue into a certain direction. But, and one of my brother-in-law thinks that Donald Trump is funding Bernie Sanders' campaign to defeat Hillary. But all in all, we're not going to find our heroes through leaders. It's going to be through our own integrity. And I like what you said about the modern times because, you know, nobody, like you said, we are in a different technological stage and no one's going to stop like a Tsarnaya brother from building a homemade bomb to blow up people at the Boston Marathon. I mean, if people really want to use killing as a way to project their message, they're going to do it. But
people always have throughout history, always, every generation, every century is marked with blood and countries going to war. So to kind of think, oh, this is just terrible. Go back to Rome. You got the barbarians and you've got, you know, Vandals and Goths and different groups. You know, these were names, barbarians. You think about this. You know, they would go out to battle and, you know, 30 or 40,000 guys would die in one afternoon by the sword, hand-to-hand battle. So, you know, has anything changed? Like, no, it's human nature. So to say, oh, let's get rid of guns and, you know, it's all going to stop. It's like, no, it's never has stopped. You want to try to control it and suppress it, but you can't eliminate it. If you do, it will find its way to another format or another link, another method. So that's just human nature.
Well, the last thing I want to say, because it's already going on 3 o'clock and we both have big days tomorrow. The thing is that I heard on Christian radio today that they believe that the European Union is going to put forth their 10 crowns, and that's going to be the element of the prophetic message. And supposedly the European Union has already designated 10 territories in the world that have to be managed. Now, when you were talking about violence, I think of a country like El Salvador that is once again plagued by uncontrollable violence. And Obama's had to deport a lot of the people that snuck through the border. But that's just one example of where the use of force has no control, and there's no government protection for people there, and it's really tragic. And it's just too bad that there are hot spots in the world like that where people really don't know from one day to the next if they're going to live or die. And well, I know someone who got married in Guatemala last summer, and they had they were Americans, like one white woman and one half Guatemalan, but they had to hire like personal bodyguards in this one part of the country to protect. They actually just pay locals like to watch their car for an hour while they go into a shop or something. So that's how it is in certain parts of the world. And in Afghanistan, it's the same way. They're faced with. I heard a special on NPR about these 5 or 6 teenage boys who emigrated to Germany alone without their family, and how they're in the school and they're all ESL students, and they were adapting and doing fine. But one reason they were adapting was because they had a good schoolmaster that was considerate of the types of struggles they were having in a new country. So I don't know, it's just everything's all mixed up in the world these days. I don't know what to think anymore. What's your final thought?
My final thought is at the end of it all, these are cycles that are repetitive, And just as violence is repetitive, so there's peace. There are people who seek love, they seek peace. And I think that's what you work towards. You don't get frustrated with the big journey. You take one step at a time. What can you control? What can you work with? You can't influence the whole world, you know. Some people have some influence, but the point is you can influence the step in front of you. You can influence the room you walk into. And I think that's where you start. And, you know, you keep that perspective. You don't lose faith. And I think that's all you can control or try to at least work with. And it'll be okay. You got to let go, I think, and not be allow these things to, you know, blow up a person's psyche. Because it will. You can go crazy trying to figure this stuff out. People have been trying to figure it out forever. And that's just part of life. It's just the way it is. You know, some things you can change, but most things you just need to accept and change what you can, but the other stuff you can't. As Abraham said, you know, Abraham Lincoln said, just you got to have the, you know, the God's grace to be able have the courage to change things you can, but the serenity to accept things that you can't change. So, those are wise words to live by.
Good. I might be trying to go to the Democratic Convention July 25th to the 28th, but I'm only going to go if Albert or Don go, because I don't want to go out there by myself.
Wow, that would be something.
Do you want to come?
Well, if I pay off all my debts to society and I'm a free man, I may do that. That's part of my plan. It may not happen by then, but
you'll never know. Joan and Nancy are coming here for Lauren's birthday in July.
Nice.
I'm just hoping I get here to L.A. before the rapture. I want to see you and Yale and Gil and a few other people.
It would be awesome.
So, okay, well, anyway, I got to run because I have to work in the morning. So I hope you get your phone situation squared away by tomorrow, but we won't be doing a show till Sunday, okay?
Yeah, that will be good. That will be it'll give you time to reload and plus, I can reload my minutes on the new phone. I'll probably get the same old thing just because I know how to work it. And that way, if it blows up again, I'm only out $29.99 at Best Buy.
It was kind of a funny story. I wish I can imagine you on the dock jumbling around with that bike and then the dock.
I didn't tell you the full story because I took a dive. I'm pretty good at taking a dive. You know, you roll with it. And I've had, you know, probably 20 or 30 falls. And, you know, I'm unfortunate I haven't broken a bone, but you just roll with it and it's okay. This particular one, because of the way I was yanked, and because I was holding the phone, so I didn't have my normal balance or gymnastic ability, I really kind of fell a bit face first. So I actually, plowed my face into the ground, and I'm glad I didn't break my nose, but it was right in the center of my nose, not the bottom, but the center. I got this nice big little red gash, so I put a band-aid on it, and of course, you know, the master asked, you know, what happened to your nose? It's all, we were just, you know, chasing squirrels, and I was next to a tree, the dog yanked, and I scraped my, my nose against tree. And it's actually, that kind of stuff happens every day. So it was a logical explanation. But I'm hoping that the bleeding will by Sunday.
Did you damage your bike?
No, it's taken all these hits quite well. I'm very blessed in that way. I usually lay it out pretty, you know, and I've been very fortunate, but like I say, you just need to, you know, not fight it, just roll with it, and usually it works out okay. All part
yeah,
of the job.
By the way, is the gash on the side of your nose or actually on your nose?
On the nose, dead center. So I think my sunglasses could be a marksman. I have a feeling it'll probably take like a week and a half for this to pass. I'm
Jesus.
Sure. But
did anyone try to help you at the scene?
No, I was kind of solitary. But the thing about it, with the Band-Aid on, you don't even really notice it. You know, it just looks like, oh, he probably scratched or cut his, you know, nose in the stair. It's not like I have black eyes and a big old, you know, like broken nose where it's all looks like you've had, you know, facial surgery. You know, it's just, you know, if you didn't know, he's just always got a little Band-Aid on the center of his nose at the top here. I am a little scratched up on the front of it also, but that'll heal up in a day or so.
Well, I'm really sorry.
I'm just glad I'm not a glamour model, you know, fortunately.
Just think, I don't even want to think about that. If you flipped off your bike off the pier and landed in the ocean.
So that was, you know, they do actually have walls and barriers and things. And of course, actually, I would take it in flight. I'm sure I would survive. I did have a, well, you remember working at SOS, working at a former company, SOS, there was a person named Jason who was on a motorcycle.
He died falling off a motorcycle off a freeway.
Yes, at the 10 and the 110, you know, that's like about 60-some feet up. He was going on that overpasses that intersect. It looks like some big colossal art monument. And a car happened to lean over into his lane and didn't even see him, pushed him off basically by a mistake. And he flew over the barrier, over the retaining wall, and fell 60 feet. Landed, was alive for about a minute. Someone ran up to him and, you know, tried to help him, and he was gasping and asking for help, and then he, you know, probably internally bled to death, I would imagine. But
so sad.
That was a crazy ride.
I was there a few days later when his wife came by. I think Brian might have given her a check or something. But I was there, and I kind of overheard the whole conversation of them talking. And it was a lot of sad things happened at SOS. There was a sales guy who sat next to me the first week I worked there, and he had terminal cancer, and he died a few weeks later. And then
we always have company parties, and we have, you know, pictures from the party. And there was a couple of them, like they put them on the wall, and they also had, you know, they were displayed. But there was a couple kind of like little snapshots that people had taken that were on one of the glass walls. And I remember one year we started marking how many people were dead. There were two sets of pictures. You know, basically, they couldn't get everyone in all the shots. So, you know, each picture had like 13 to 15 people. And so there was like 30 people on the wall. And one day we just started going by, it was like the Deadpool. And it was like about, you know, 8 people on the wall are dead, you know. And so we go around, it was like, you know, who's next? And it was, you know, we never got to update that since the company got sold. And it would be interesting, actually, to see who's left. I'm still alive.
Yeah, there was a lot of many tragedies, including Hakeem killing his wife, which you didn't tell me about till this year.
Right. I don't think Hakeem was in one of those pictures either. That would have, you know, he didn't make the wall of fame or shame, as it were.
Well, anyway, I have to go to bed now. And I already had one nightmare tonight, so I'll tell you about it Sunday. But
okay.
Have a good night. Have a good night, okay?
Excellent. Godspeed to you, and remember to vote when it's your time in your state. And you know, don't worry. Trust God. Have faith, and you know, grin and bear it. We'll get through this.
If Trump wins, he is the Antichrist, and it's no secret. I'm gonna end the show with "Tell It to My Heart." I think that's what it's called. Your song, and you can stay on and listen. I'm going to mute myself. but I'm going to play it, okay? God bless
right.
you, and thanks for the contribution.
Good night, America.
Tell me that it's only...
can say goodnight again.
Ladies and gentlemen, once again, thank you for joining us here at the Jane Hoffman Show, sponsored by Best Buy, who brings you Net 10 cell phones at $29.99. And also our good friends at the good old company of SOS, which is de facto no longer in existence.
It's now Office Solutions.
Well, I didn't want to, plug them, but yes, Office Solutions. Yes, problem solved. Fire the employees.
And this is the Janessa Hoffman Show with my posse, John the musician, Albert the activist, and Don the know-it-all. With that, I'm hanging up. Good
All
night,
right.
evil planet.
Good night,
Good night.
Jane.
Good night.